This is the first of four programs in which I want to question some of the assumptions usually made about the tradition of European painting. That tradition which was born about 1400, died about 1900. Tonight, it isn't so much the paintings themselves which I want to consider, as the way we now see them, now in the second half of the 20th century. Because we see these paintings as nobody saw them before. If we discover why this is so, we shall also discover something about ourselves and the situation in which we are living.
Well, here you go, and there you go. You're back, and I'm still here. I'm Billy Flanagan, and today you'll stick with me, and we'll find out how to achieve the kind of thing on canvas that the truly insane seem to come up with little or no effort or thought. There's a color there. I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter what color it is. Haven't you admired those loony eyes on the tramps, you know, or the strange figures in the art of the insane that you find selling for high prices in art centers in the big cities? Well, none of that is as hard as it seems. So today, I'd like you to go along with me today. Try this. Take some of that paint. Let's try another tube here. There we go. There's a big blob of it. I think that's called green, maybe. Not sure. It doesn't matter. It's not as hard as it seems to achieve truly insane effects on canvas without growing through that rigorous training that the insane must go through in those institutions in which they're kept. Now, I'm going to show you today how to do it. You'll be standing on your head. Don't try that. It would be insane. Let's take out our canvas. One of my favorite techniques is to pee all over a fresh canvas before you paint on it. I pre-peed on this because it's TV. I'm not going to do it on TV. It yellows the background and it gives it a smell that'll put you in the mood to recreate some art of the insane. Just using my hairdryer on it here, and you notice when you put the hairdryer on it, the smell really becomes almost unbearable. And it particularly helps when you're painting the eyes to have this wafting up. Smell puts you right there in the attic or the dungeon or wherever you like to imagine the insane artist. He's painting, he's scraping, he's peeing. You get the feeling. There, that's just right. Now let's take some more paint here. Thank you. How about this color? Doesn't matter. And I'm using a brush here. You'll notice this brush has a number on it. Doesn't matter what number it is. Who cares? As long as there's some number on it, that gets the job done. You wet the brush here and you roll it. There you go. It all looks orange to me. And you just then wipe it on your pants, if you're wearing pants. And if you're not, just squeeze it between your legs, because we're sure to find a clever use for it later. Now, some sky. I like sky because it signals to you and to me we're outdoors, but to the insane artist it signals something that's above all the insane stuff that we're going to put on with this trowel here and some other color. Let's use this one. Slap it on. We're getting those crazy eyes here, you see. Let's put a hat on that scarecrow. A death's head. I like that. Make that a black gardenia, I think. There we go, pee all over it. We won't do that on TV, but at home you just feel free to pee right all over it. And before you know it, you've got something that'll look real nice, stacked up with a bunch of pictures of old people at a yard sale or a rummage mall. Well, thanks for being with me. I'm Billy Flanagan. Ooh. Next week on Art of the Insane.
Botticelli's Venus and Mars used to be a unique image, which it was only possible to see in the room where it was actually hanging. Now its image, or a detail of it, or the image of any other painting which is reproduced, can be seen in a million different places at the same time.
And it's 1, 2, 3.
40,000 headmen couldn't make me change my mind. If I had to take the choice between the deaf man and the blind, I know just where my feet should go, but that's enough for me. I turn around and knock them down and walk across the sea.
As you look at them now, on your screen, your wallpaper is round them. Your window is opposite them. Your carpet is below them. At this same moment, they are on many other screens, surrounded by different objects, different colors, different sounds. You are seeing them in the context of your own life. They are surrounded not by gilt frames, but by the familiarity of the room you are in and the people around you. Once all these paintings belonged to their own place. Some were altarpieces in churches. Originally, paintings were an integral part of the building for which they were designed. Sometimes, when you go into a Renaissance church or chapel, you have the feeling that the images on the wall are records of the building's interior life. Together, they make up the building's memory. So much are they part of the life and individuality of the building. Everything around the image is part of its meaning. Its uniqueness is part of the uniqueness of the single place where it is. Everything around it confirms and consolidates its meaning.
Is it going to be all right?
It's going to be all right!
Oh, you bet! Dear friends, it is going to be all right. It's going to be all right tonight. Here at the Powerhouse Church of the Presumptuous Assumption of the Blinding Light.
Oh, blinding light, oh, light that blinds, I cannot see, look out for me.
Yes, friends, welcome to Pastor Flash's Hour of Reckoning. With Organ Leroy, at his organ again. And the 50-voice St. Louis Aquarium Choir. I'm Deacon E.L. Mouse, but dear friends, in these days of modern time, when you can't tell the ACs from the DCs, well, aren't we all yearning for someone who can turn on a little stopping power? Dear friends, I mean a smoky glass. Don't you think I mean a lightning rod with which to chase these spooks away? Don't you know I mean our own pastor, Rod Flash? He's been up for a week, but he's coming down.
The process of seeing paintings or seeing anything else is less spontaneous and natural than we tend to believe. A large part of seeing depends upon habit and convention. All the paintings of the tradition used the convention of perspective, which is unique to European art. Now, perspective centers everything on the eye of the beholder. It is like a beam from a lighthouse, only instead of light traveling outwards, appearances travel in. And our tradition of art called those appearances reality. Perspective makes the eye the center of the visible world. But the human eye can only be in one place at a time. It takes its visible world with it as it walks.
Oh, how can you be in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all?
With the invention of the camera, everything changed. We could see things which were not there in front of us. Appearances could travel across the world. It was no longer so easy to think of appearances always traveling regularly to a single center.
I am an eye, a mechanical eye. I, the machine, show you a world the way only I can see it. I free myself for today and forever from human immobility. I'm in constant movement. I approach and pull away from objects. I creep under them. I move alongside a running horse's mouth. I fall and rise with the falling and rising bodies. This is I, the machine, maneuvering in the chaotic movements, recording one movement after another in the most complex combinations. Freed from the boundaries of time and space, I coordinate any and all points of the universe wherever I want them to be. My way leads towards the creation of a fresh perception of the world. Thus I explain, in a new way, the world unknown to you.
Those words are from a manifesto written in 1923 by Ziga Vertov, the Russian film director. And the images are from a film he made in 1928 called The Man with a Movie Camera. The invention of the camera has changed not only what we see, but how we see it. And in a crucial but quite simple way, it has even changed paintings painted long before it was invented. The painting on the wall, like a human eye, can only be in one place at one time. The camera reproduces it, making it available in any size, anywhere, for any purpose.
Prepare shift Simulfax for human form. Prepare mirror clone.
What are you doing?
Clone me.
Oh, that's, I think that's against the rules.
Legal entry.
Clone me, Dr. Memory.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm a Clem.
It's you.
No, Barney, I'm me. That's just a hologram.
I don't want to suggest that there is nothing left to experience before original works of art, except a certain sense of awe. Because they have survived, because they're genuine, because they're absurdly valuable. A lot more is possible. But only if art is stripped of the false mystery and the false religiosity which surrounds it. This religiosity, usually linked with cash value, but always invoked in the name of culture and civilization, is in fact a substitute for what paintings lost when the camera made them reproducible. The National Gallery sell more reproductions of this Leonardo cartoon than of any other picture. But what are the meanings these reproductions acquire in each home when they're hung or pinned to the wall? And how different are all these meanings from its original one, when Leonardo first worked on it to work out an idea for a painting? The camera, by making the work of art transmittable, has multiplied its possible meanings and destroyed its unique original meaning. Have works of art gained anything by this? They have lost and gained. Let me try to explain how. The most important thing about paintings themselves is that their images are silent, still. I can't demonstrate the stillness, for the lines on your screen are never still. And in a sense, the pages of a book are never still. But I can demonstrate the silence. Occasionally, this uninterrupted silence and the stillness of a painting can be very striking. The experience of this has almost nothing to do with what anybody teaches about art. It's as if the painting, absolutely still, soundless, becomes a corridor connecting the moment it represents with the moment at which you are looking at it. And something travels down that corridor at a speed greater than light, throwing into question our way of measuring time itself.
Where am I?
Welcome to the planet Tralfamador, Mr. Pilgrim. Tralfamador.
Oh. How did I get here?
There is no how, Mr. Pilgrim. There is no why. The moment simply is.
I don't understand. Where are you?
Oh, you can't see us, Mr. Pilgrim. We live in the fourth dimension. But we can see you, and there are many important Tralfamadorians here to welcome you.
Oh, well, how do you do?
We hope that you'll find your accommodations here suitable.
I have to stay here?
I'm afraid so.
You mean I can't leave of my own free will?
Mr. Pilgrim, we have visited 31 inhabited planets in the universe. We have studied reports on 100 more. And only on Earth is there any talk of free will.
Well, what'll I do? It looked like the end of the world.
What looked like the end of the world, Mr. Pilgrim?
Dresden, after the bombing.
Don't be so egocentric, Mr. Pilgrim. We know how the world ends, and it has nothing to do with Earth, except that it gets wiped out, too.
Really? How does it end?
While we're experimenting with new fuels, a Tralfamadorian test pilot panics, presses the wrong button, and the whole universe disappears.
But you have to stop him. If you know this, can't you keep the pilot from pressing
He has always pressed it, and he always will. We always let him, and we always will let him.
Mr. Pilgrim, a pleasant way to spend eternity is to ignore the bad times and concentrate on the good.
On Tralfamador, you learn that the world is just a collection of moments. all strung together in beautiful random order. And if we're going to survive, it's up to us to concentrate on the good moments and ignore the bad. I died in Philadelphia, where I was giving a speech on the subject of Tralfamador.
See, in Tralfamador, where I presently dwell, life has no beginning, no middle, and no end. For example, many years ago, a certain man promised to have me killed. He's an old man now, living not far from here. He's read all the publicity associated with my appearance. He's insane, and tonight he'll keep his promise. If you protest, if you think that death is a terrible thing, then you've not understood what I've said. You see, it's time for you to go home to your wives and your children. It's time for me to be dead for a little while, and then live again. I give you the Tralfamadorian greeting. Hello. Farewell. Hello. Farewell. Eternally connected, eternally embracing. Hello.
Because paintings are silent and still, and because their meaning is no longer attached to them, but has become transmittable, paintings lend themselves to easy manipulation. They can be used to make arguments or points which may be different, very different, from their original meaning. And because paintings are essentially silent and still, the most obvious way of manipulating them is by using movement and sound. The camera moves in to remove a detail of a painting from the whole. Its meaning changes. An allegorical figure becomes a pretty girl anywhere. From being part of a strange poetical world of metamorphosis, a dog can be turned into a pet, not unlike the dog of his master's voice.
He's dogged.
Hey! Oh, hey! I've got a dog. Hey, little fella. I know what. I'm gonna call you Relent. Then I won't be relentless anymore. Get it?
At Rolling and Blackout, they turn left.
Hey, that's my ankle. You trying to tell me something, little guy? Hey, calm down. You sound like a drunken French monkey. Wait. Oh, I get it. I got my hat over my third eye. Let me just lift it up and... How's that?
Ah, about time, you dumb dick.
Let's go.
At Bughouse and Nightingale, they turn right.
Hey, 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 who's that?
That's my announcer.
You mean an imaginary being who speaks to you?
Well, it's too complicated to explain to a dog.
Speciesist.
Skeptic.
Woof.
I've now emphasized the ways in which reproduction makes the meaning of works of art ambiguous. This is not as negative as it necessarily sounds, if we realize what is happening. What it means, in theory, is that reproduction of works of art can be used by anybody for their own purposes. Images can be used like words. We can talk with them. Reproduction should make it easier to connect our experience of art directly with other experiences. You can sometimes see how naturally this begins to happen when, for instance, children or adults pin up reproductions alongside snapshots or their own drawings or pages from magazines. There, everything belongs to the same visual language used for describing or recreating experience. What so often inhibits such a spontaneous process is the false mystification which surrounds art. For instance, the art book depends upon reproductions. Yet often, what the reproductions make accessible, a text begins to make inaccessible. What might become part of our language is jealously guarded and kept within the narrow preserves of the art expert.
Hello. Recognize these teeth? I'm Art Snob, and I'm speaking for Mr. Leonardo's Warehouse of Eternal Art. Move the Louvre to your own den or patio with this indoor-outdoor all-weather art. These beautiful paintings are oil on astroturf by great masters, and each painting is signed by someone. All your favorite subjects, bulls, panthers, clowns, hobos, sad-eyed orphans. Look at these, panthers eating clowns, orphans roasting hobos, sad-eyed bulls goring crying orphans. This is your rugged, year-round art, perfect for your patio or under your car. Here's how to order.
That's Mr. Leonardo's Warehouse of Eternal Art at 82 Haunted Shopping Mall Highway in King's Nose. Offer not valid in states covered by active consumer fraud statutes.
Call extension 95 and order now before it's too late.
Children, until they are educated out of it and are forced to accept the mystifications, look at images and interpret them very directly. They connect any image, whether from a comic or from the National Gallery, directly with their own experience. I showed a reproduction of the Caravaggio to a group of school children.
I think it could have been they stole the food. One of them saying, I'm not going to eat it, it's stolen food.
And that, he's going, why not? Something
like that. You think he wants to get up?
Yeah.
He looks as if he's a bit
just about to push the table
over. He's all romantic and she wants to go away and do something.
Oh, it might be Jesus.
What makes you think it might be Jesus?
Well, he's in the center of the table, and he looks like he might be a leader of some kind.
Looks like a sheep to me.
And yeah. So they've got the food on the table there.
Yes, but they haven't got bread or wine.
Yes.
What do the rest of you think about him saying that it might be Jesus?
I don't think it's Jesus.
He's got his own opinion.
Could be.
Some of you think it's a man, and some of you think it's a woman.
I think it's a woman.
You can tell.
Because
she's got
too fat
to be a man. It looks as though they're all going to jump out and kiss her, because like, she just says that. And he's got his arm out to cuddle her, and he's jumping out and run around.
I think it's a man.
I think it's a woman.
It is a woman. There's no bristles even.
Yes, but he hasn't got any bristles.
He got a moustache.
Yes, but he hasn't got any bristles.
Not quite all, but most of the boys thought that he was a man, and most of the girls, you thought she was a woman.
I'm not sure.
And you said she was perhaps both. Because they were really looking and really relating what they saw to their own experience, they recognized something that most adults wouldn't. Without knowing the artist's name, let alone anything about Caravaggio's life or the fact that he was a homosexual, they immediately saw how sexually ambivalent the principal figure was.
All races okay, but let's slow down together. Tired of fighting. Must be affectionate, horny, and interested in religion, sex, miracles, etc. Bye okay. In fact, everything okay. Just write me a picture. I'm Jesus, Post Office Box 674. San Antonio, Texas.
Pajamas advance. Whoa, and here comes Retardo. Little Jesus Retardo. Coming out as a principal jammer now, the fans go wild. And now the whip. The devil sending out the big man. Look out, here he comes now. Big mean Exxon. They call him Dick the Psycho Exxon. Exxon slugging, Exxon chopping. Whoa, how can that little Jesus suffer so? Wait a minute. The girls are storming out on the ice and they look mad. They've stopped the action. They've got Jesus down. Five of them. This is terrible. This is wonderful. He's grinning. The little man is grinning again and again. Now they got Exxon. Down from the trunks. Down comes the guard. He's smiling. I'm smiling. See me smile. See me smile. See me smile. See me smile.
Like an exorcist had been at work, you know? I saw them all lifted off straight up to who knows where. The moon? The stars? Ah, it was crazy. They was all balled together and them lights was flashing and you couldn't tell who was what or which was doing what to who. Boy, did they all look confused and happy. What a relief for them, you know? I guess in a world where no one is ashamed of sex, it's a lot different, you know? Anyways, what a war it had been.
I was sleepy and hungry, and I'd begun to notice the sinking feeling that no one back on my own channel would believe me. And over here, nothing but desert. That was nice, but give me some scotch and a bag of pipe dreams and a dame, and it'd be a lot nicer. So I started walking. I'd get back, there was no doubt about that, but would I ever be the same?
That's it. Till another time for the secret adventures of Dick Primate, Erect Detective. Tonight's story was true, and in a moment, the results of that trial.
Here's Regular. Here's Ethel. Here's Juicy. Here's Tricky. Here's Little Jesus. Here's the Devil. Here's the Angels. Here's the Boss.
But remember that I am controlling and using for my own purposes the means of reproduction needed for these programs.
I don't hide that I'm using these images for my own benefit.
The images may be like words, but there is no dialogue yet. You cannot reply to me. For that to become possible in the modern media of communication, access to television must be extended beyond its present narrow limits. Meanwhile, with this program, as with all programs, you receive images and meanings which are arranged. I hope you will consider what I arrange, but be skeptical of it.
After we'd gotten to know and feel up each other pretty well, Alla let me come to her apartment to pick her up for a date. We had previously always met somewhere in the city, and I soon found out why she hadn't wanted me to visit earlier. Outside, it was typical of other buildings, a blocky, huge, Stalin-era complex with a central court where they sometimes had a little movie theater or a laundry or a small grocery store. But once I stepped inside, I was shocked. It had been damaged from the war and never repaired. So part of the interior was burned, the staircase was damaged, and there was graffiti on the walls. They simply left the damage and rebuilt the outside of the building. And that's when I got it. That's the Soviet Union. They make it look okay on the outside, but inside, everybody had to keep a terrible secret and suffer. You had to walk up a tilted staircase, still riddled with bullet holes. And you better keep your mouth shut.